Ireland's supermarket industry is worth 9 billion euro each year. And someone is about to get a slice of it.
I would love to win this competition. That would be a dream come true.
With a prize worth 100,000 euro, one of the biggest in Irish television history, it's a life-changing opportunity. Hundreds entered.
I never thought I'd get to this level, to be in here with all these, what I would call, business people.
But ultimately, the Lidl judges will decide which product is fit to sell on their shelves.
It's going to get a lot tougher from here on in.
Some of Ireland's best food brains will mentor our wannabe food entrepreneurs.
The stakes are really high, and the prize, it's huge.
There can only be one winner.
It was absolutely nerve-wracking watching everything unfold.
But just who will capture the taste of success?
Now, as you know, every Tuesday we've been featuring contestants from RTE1's Taste of Success. Tonight at 8:30, they're down to the last eight. Pat O'Mahony has been chatting with one of those lucky enough to get this far, Pat.
I took a trip to rural Wicklow near Ashford to meet Eleanor Hickson, who came through the Leinster Heat with her gluten-free artisan brown bread.
Oh yes, I remember Eleanor, yeah.
Great character. When I arrived, she was doing a bit of informal cooking for her two daughters, Anna and Benita.
I'm making you drop scones.
They look like pancakes.
Yeah, they look lovely.
Yeah, they are nice.
Eleanor, you're here in the middle of the country rather than the city, which is an odd place to run a business, or is it?
Well, not for me, no, because I have my animals and my children really love the country and they grew up in the country. So it's just going back to my roots because I originally was from Darkest Mayo, which is...
You don't sound like a Mayo woman. Where did you get that accent?
Well, I suppose I've been so lucky in my life because I've travelled a lot. And I've also been at school abroad. And I also worked in Paris and London. And so when I came back to Dublin, I was so excited because it was like coming home when I came to Trinity. And I just loved it so much. And then I married my lovely husband, who I'm not married to anymore. I was an 80s child, which kind of ages me. But so we all had to go away, and all my friends did. You know, Dublin for me is an incredible place, and I really thought very hard about leaving it because I loved it so much. And my friends from Dublin 6, they were all saying, culturally it's going to be so strange, and will you be all right? And, you know, Wicklow people are very odd.
And they're no odder than the rest of us.
Well, they're just, they've been completely lovely. They've totally, totally embraced me, and I have them. Wicklow is, in its funny, kind of low-key way, they don't show off or anything, but it's actually really happening, Wicklow. And I can see it becoming the new Kinsale or the new Enniscorthy.
Interesting. Oh, so it's meant to look like that?
No. Like Moonrock?
No, they all just fell apart.
So out here in the country, you have your two daughters who live with you?
Well, they don't live here permanently, no, they don't. They live with their father some of the time, and they live with me a bit of the time. So they kind of share us, which is very civilised.
Very modern.
Yeah, it's very nice, yeah.
How long have you been here now?
Since 2013 in March. And I actually, when I first moved, I was incredibly depressed because, just for various reasons, my life had changed so much, personally and geographically. But, I mean, as soon as I kind of gathered myself together and thought, OK, this is not going to change, this is your life now, I just picked up and made some friends, went on a fantastic cookery course, which changed the way that I saw food. Previously, I'd been really foodie, but trying to think what to do with food, and then this lovely course, which I don't know if I can mention it, but the Catherine Fulvio course, and she was my mentor.
I was going to ask you about that anyway, so you may as well mention it. You did a course with the woman who, in the series, is a judge of yours. So is there a conflict of interest going on here?
Well, I don't know, because I just adore her, and I've got all her books, you can see on my cookery books.
But she was essentially the woman who got you to the first batch of eight. So she would have known you. So was there,
But I don't think, she has so many people on her courses. And I was just a girl who actually couldn't chop an onion. I mean, she kept making us do the chefy thing of chopping an onion. I couldn't do it. So I was rather, lackluster. I was a bit low on self-esteem about my onion chopping. But I guess we all have our strengths.
So you were delighted to have her as a mentor then?
Well, I just really took to her. And it was the fact that when I was so depressed, I couldn't even explain to you how depressed I was. I used to walk by the sea and just think, you know, this is awful. I don't know that I can ever move forward. And it was just a really dark time. And her, you know, jolly little cookery school that she runs up in Ballynockan, it was just so cheerful. And she just makes it so much fun.
We're in your kitchen. So is this where all the magic happens?
Well, I don't know that my children would call my cooking magic. It's often really rushed. But the actual magic happens in my bespoke bakery, which has been co-designed with Siobhan Turner of the HSE in Wicklow. They were fantastic, the HSE. They helped me from A to Z with the whole of the business.
So you have an on-site bakery?
Yes, I do.
Can we have a look?
Yeah, it costs me a fortune. I have no money left.
Ah, so why is this bespoke? How is this designed so that it's right for you?
Well, Siobhan wanted it pristine and so that we could get it right for the gluten-free baking. Because gluten-free baking, obviously, you're feeding celiacs, you're feeding people with intolerance on possibly a very large level. So you don't want to have any slip-ups. So these are all totally beautiful white bevel tiles, are all completely wipe-friendly. You can just get every single bit of dust out of them. And these are really, really easy to clean because it's just steel and shiny plastic. And then I have my anti-fly screen and my fly zapper thing, which is HSE relevant because we've a very high standard here in Ireland for artisan food. Okay, it means that the producers become totally broke because their premises have to be, you know, just so. But on the other hand, once it's done, I guess. And this is in here, this fridge, because she wanted to have my actual baking things on the day in my fridge, in my actual bakery, and not in the other fridge there, which is outside the bakery.
So this is all designed from scratch, and you say expensive. Do you want to put a price on it?
The bones are 40, possibly more.
40 grand.
Well, just to put this little thing on, you know, because I had
to... It's an extension to the house.
Yeah, I had to build it on, you know, and it had to be nice. It couldn't just be a shack, obviously. I mean, lots of people, they would just bake bread in their garage, but because it's gluten-free, you have to be so careful that it's really in a nice environment. Well, I don't know, perhaps it's just me and I'm just totally perfectionist. I am perfectionist.
Why did you go down the gluten-free road?
Because, I didn't choose to go down it. At the beginning, I was just doing spelt and wheat and rye. And then my gluten-free friend, Fiona, said, oh, could you bake gluten-free? And I couldn't at all. And it was a disaster. But then eventually, just trying and trying, they got better. And so the gluten-free loaves were so good that the market suddenly exploded for them. And suddenly, I realised I was doing kind of 95% gluten-free and only 5% spelt and no wheat at all and no rye. So then I just gave up all the others and just did gluten-free because it just seemed to make sense.
Is there a long-term business in gluten-free bread?
Well, I think so, because if you look at the gluten-free stats from America, we don't have too many here. But if you look at them in America, I mean, the gluten-free market is going to be worth $6.6 billion by 2016.
So obviously,
so it's got to have impact.
Proportionally here, it would.
Yeah, and I mean 29% of people globally are choosing gluten-free and maybe gluten intolerant, but they will choose it even if they don't know that they are gluten intolerant. They'll choose it for health reasons. So it's like yoga and jogging and bottled water were all a fad in the 80s and now they're mainstream. I think it's going to get like that for gluten-free. The people who want to eat healthy are just not going to eat processed wheat.
Tell me about the disasters of baking gluten-free when you started.
There were loads of things which went wrong. I couldn't get the texture right and everything kept turning out like a rock. And then I'd put far too much liquid in because my friend said, oh, liquefy it. And then you have to kind of aerate it and bounce it around. So I did tons of different things. And then one day I had a eureka moment because I just poured in a whole ton of oil to my dairy-free loaf by accident. And that turned out fantastic. And so then I tweaked my other loaf, which was the show loaf. The Deluxe Brown is the show loaf. And that just changed everything. But also, I listen to bakers. So I'll listen to them and see what they have to say about stuff. And then I'll tweak it according to the gluten-free. Because, in fact, mainstream bakers, not being rude, but they don't know anything about gluten-free. So they often would give you lovely, lovely pearls of wisdom, but which aren't actually relevant to baking gluten-free. And they will say to me, gosh, this bread's hard to make. And you go, little halo, because I've managed to do it.
What is gluten-free bread?
Yeah, that's a really good point. What is it? Well, it's just bread without that big enemy, which is gluten, which is with sugar. Sugar and gluten are both the new enemies. And one of my top-selling loaves is free from added sugar, free from gluten, free from wheat, free from eggs, free from dairy, free from nuts.
What is in there? How do you make bread without all that stuff?
Well, there's gluten-free flour, linseed, sunflower oil, apple juice, and a little salt, but not too much because it has to be low salt. And gluten-free baking powder, gluten-free baking soda.
The two judges loved it.
Yeah, they really did, didn't they? And boy, were they hard, because in fact, looking at the programmes that have been so far, gosh, they're tough. You know, they're tough taskmasters, and also they seem to be after the mainstream artisan, and all the poor people who did kind of a little bit sort of out there stuff got sort of tossed aside as not being commercial.
But it's not a programme about non-commercial stuff. They're looking for a product that will go on the shelf of a mainstream supermarket.
That's exactly it, yeah. So, I mean, it is interesting how ruthless they are, because they were so lovely with us. That, you know, you don't see the commercial aspect until you're actually watching the show, and they just, you know, they're just pretty tough, really.
If you win, would it be easy to scale up your product to an industrial level?
That, I have to be honest, I think my bread is really quite special and handmade, and I wonder if it would work as a, you know, volume product. I just don't know. Because the volume gluten-free bread that I eat is frankly revolting. So I don't know whether this really can scale up, because you'd probably have to cheapen it. And I don't know how you'd cheapen this beautiful bread. I would be heartbroken to cheapen it, in other words. So, but if somebody else wanted to buy the recipe and then jig it, that's fine. But I wouldn't do it to my bread.
Which is odd, because this competition is all about getting a product mass produced.
Yes, I know, and it only occurred to me after it got started that my bread might possibly not be mainstream. I'm just not sure about a quality artisan loaf.
$100,000 is the prize, which is a lot of money. Mm. What would you do if you won?
Oh, I'd develop this, because I'm convinced that gluten-free is the path. And I'm already doing mounds of new recipes. I've got recipe development on my brain at the moment. So I'm working a lot with all sorts of different things like polenta and, let me think, well, I have loads of fantastic almond recipes. So anyway, I'm not going to give too much away, because it's all kind of happening as we speak. But it's really exciting. And, you know, gluten-free is really the future. So there's loads I could do. I mean, I don't know, in time to come. I don't know if I'll stay niche, but, you know, I'll just have to see, because it's quite a young business, I'll just have to see how things go in the next year.
RTE Radio 1.